Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here on a Saturday. Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Cerny. Thanks for joining us. Glad you've tuned in. We have in studio Dr. Cindy Bigby, who is representing a particular concern, an effort called Nonviolent Communication. Cindy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad that you are here. I should tell you, folks, this is a woman who, in her academic training, comes to us as an instructional systems designer. Your graduate training was in instructional systems design.
That's right. Not
sure exactly what that means, but we'll find that out as we go forward. But these days, your passion is nonviolent communication, and that's certainly timely, given some of the more tragic things we've endured as a nation, as a world, and certainly in certain communities, well known to us now, that were completely off the radar prior, you know. But to have witnessed the shooting of innocent school children, mm-hmm. I mean, that has, of course, then ignited the re-emergence of this debate over gun violence, particularly. But your efforts seem to me broader than that, in as much as you're not just looking at how do we regulate guns or the use of guns. You're looking at how we talk to each other, how we communicate, how we connect. Give us a little bit of a background. What is this whole effort of nonviolent communication from your point of view?
Well, it was started about 30, 40 years ago now by a guy named Marshall Rosenberg.
Okay.
He's got a doctorate in clinical psychology.
Okay.
I think he was a little bit disillusioned with, traditional formal psychology. And out of that, his work with nonviolent communication came, which is really mostly about how do you be with people?
Yeah.
How can you just be present with people?
Right.
Even when you don't necessarily like what it is that they're saying or doing.
Right.
And I would contend that the whole gun control debate or a conversation hasn't been a conversation at all, and that's why we're kind of going around in circles here.
Mm.
It's because people don't know how to actually talk to one another.
So we're not in conversation, we're just talking at one another.
We don't know how to actually hold space and be present for another person, even if we're disagreeing with them, and come to it from that angle so that you really get the person, and then a solution can come out of that, really getting one another.
Okay, so, wow. So we've got, at one level, this debate over guns and the use of control of guns, but then at this other level, we're looking at how it is that we, any of us, communicate with one another, whether it's one-on-one or in some larger scale, groups to groups, and Republicans to Democrats, or conservatives to liberals, or male to female. Boy, there's a
there's
can
a lot
of worms
of
that
there.
We can open up. But you know, it occurs to me that even within this business of gun control, and I don't mean to keep dragging us in that direction, except that it seems like the real point of dissension is whether or not I have the right to a gun. And to me, that is not the question as much as, do I have the right to use a gun inappropriately? You know, if you're going to try to take guns away, is that really the point? Or more germane to what you're focused on, why is that even a concern if we've dealt with how we communicate at large? If, for example, this young man who ended up killing his own mother and himself and these kids had within himself the ability to talk through, connect with other folks, if others in his life were empathetic, if they were in conversation, gee, I don't know, maybe that could have been contributive to a better solution than to load up a bunch of weapons and kill people. So, you know, he is the one who killed these people. You know, had he not the guns, well, okay, maybe he wouldn't have had it as easy. He would have found some other way.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you say basically is you're having some question about, you know, what was at the root of that? What was at the root of that? And
I mean, where do we start in trying to solve
right.
the problem? And I'm thinking you're saying that the problem isn't in any one given device.
Well, I mean, I've had many, many experiences myself with people that are in crisis situations.
Yeah.
And when they get heard, when there's really presence, when there is empathy, and let me say empathy via NVC, nonviolent communication, is very different than I think most people understand empathy to be.
Okay.
It's actually a learned skill.
Okay, we'll get to that.
But when they get that level of empathy, it's like the situation can de-escalate. And I think that we, mostly as human beings, we have not learned the skill of being able to listen empathetically to one another. We think we know how to do that. But definitely when crises happen or a conflict happens or a hot topic, even like this whole gun debate thing happens, that whole skill of being able to really listen to another human being and get what's going on for that other human being and being able to address at that level what's going on, that goes out the door. We haven't learned that. No place do we teach that. Most parents don't teach that to our kids because we ourselves have never learned it. We're not teaching it in the schools. People don't have that as a skill for one another. And we have a lot of other skills. We know how to debate really well. We know how to advise really well. We know how to explain and question. We have a lot of other skills when it comes to dialogue, but we do not have the skill of empathy for the most part.
Well, and it seems to me, too, that our culture rewards us in many ways for being self-centered. You know, it's all about me. It's all about the I. And we salute those people who are able to charge through and achieve. And
well,
you know,
I'd like to debate on that.
Well,
just a little
so.
Bit because
yeah.
I think, you know, you might seemingly be rewarded on the outside.
Yeah.
But I think if people are really honest with themselves, what we're all wanting as human beings is connection.
Ah.
I think if you were to ask any person to really ask themselves if connection is an important thing to them in their lives and how well connected are they really to their kids, to their colleagues, to their co-workers, to their community people, how really connected, like free-flowing connected, easily connected are we with one another in our lives? And I'm guessing that most people have an experience of a lot of disconnect in their life.
Okay, so I'm hearing you say that it is a substitute for what we really hunger for. It is this achievement of, let's say, fame or fortune or prestige or power. Those are substitutes for what I really want.
Well, I think that's probably true. And I think it's not even, you know, something that people consciously do.
Yeah.
It's that we have not learned how to have connection with one another. Really, even, you know, especially when you've got a conflict going on. How do you get to that? How do I actually get into connection with this person?
And so empathy then, in general, is what? Is the process? How would you describe empathy?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question because...
I am too.
If you were to take
That's
one of my classes...
That's why we're here, because this is how it works. I ask questions, you help me understand, and we all win.
Right.
Okay. I'm 4 years old, okay? Just remember that.
Okay, and with the NVC type empathy that I teach, it's basically got three components.
Okay.
And they're not necessarily sequential. It's the biggest component is being present to another person.
Being present. Physically present or just...
Fully present. So if you start to notice, those of you listening out there, even right now, you can do this little thing of how present are you with hearing what we're talking about.
Pay attention, okay. Boys and girls.
So if you notice your mind starting to wander and having some opinions or some thoughts or, you know, something you'd like to say back or any of that kind of stuff, then, you know, then you're not being present anymore. Mm. So being present is being able to put your full attention on another human being. Mm. And that's very hard for us because, you know, most of the time when we're in dialogue with somebody, somebody says something and we immediately want to say something back.
Right, right.
So we're not present anymore. We're only present to what's in our own head, right?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Folks, I'm sorry. That's the point. And I make a joke of it, but I must be ADD because, I mean, I'm like, we're all over the map.
Well, it's a skill. I mean, when I first started doing this process, it wasn't like, ooh, I was good at being present and being able. And even, it's not 100% for me now. It's something that I have to actually pay conscious attention to being present to another person. Right. And when I notice, maybe I do notice my mind wandering or having a judgment, and then I just kind of put it aside. I'm like, okay, let me just bring my focus fully back to this person here and what they're saying. Just totally open to what they're saying. Okay.
See, this is good for me. This is good. No, you're helping me.
So, and here's another part of it. So I'm hearing that you're getting some benefit out of what we're doing.
You've just said back to me what you heard me say.
Yes. So the second part of empathy is maybe just understanding what's going on for another person.
So presence and then understanding.
Okay. Yeah. And understanding is not necessarily agreeing. You can be in conflict with somebody and not necessarily agreeing with what they have to say.
Yeah.
But you're just trying to get the gist of what...
Confirming what it is you've just heard them say.
Yeah, what is it that you're...
Is it... So they know.
What's making you operate here, right?
Yeah, I like that.
And so you might do that just by kind of paraphrasing back what a person is saying.
Right.
That's part
You're good,
of it.
You got a gift, I'm saying. No, you. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here on Saturday. Cindy Bigby, the doctor Cindy Bigby, who's doing her very best to try to help me stay on task here. It's not easy, folks. Not easy being me.
Can I tell you the third part?
Please.
Then?
Now we get to go to the third. See, we had three components. We've got the presence. We need to be present.
Understanding.
We show understanding. And then what's the third?
The third is what we call needs languaging. Because with nonviolent communication, the crux of this work is built on the idea that all human beings share a common set of universal needs. And that all conflict is actually a tragic expression of an unmet need.
I need it to always be about me. Okay, let's just establish that.
See, yeah, that you.
I tell people I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid the next 5 minutes are not about me.
Yeah, so you're really wanting to know that you're important.
That I'm the center of everybody's importance.
Yeah, that there's something really big about
that.
Well,
I joke about it, but I think what gets a lot of people into broadcasting particularly and you know, entertainment and television and such, or on stage, you know, they want everybody to look at them.
Yeah.
It's the Sally Fields syndrome thing, you know, right?
Yeah, so this need for to know that you matter, though.
Yep.
I guarantee you everybody else out there has that same need. Maybe
really?
It's not. Yeah, really. Really. Maybe not to the degree, you know, our needs kind of present themselves for some bigger than others, but we all share the same ones. I want to know that I matter. Mm. Sure.
So that's not a bad thing.
No.
It's a human thing.
It's a human thing. We all have the need for security. We all have the need for safety. We all have the need for happiness, you know.
And significance.
And significance. And inspiration. There's a ton of human universal needs. And the thing is when we're doing empathy via NVC empathy, what we're trying to get at is what's going on for this person need-wise and being able to speak at that level.
I don't know about you folks, but I'm feeling a lot better. Because, I mean, seriously, I mean, just the way that you have spoken with me in this last few minutes, I'm thinking I'm not such a weirdo. And, of course, Carl is over there shaking his head thinking, now, you're just as weird as you thought you were. Thanks, Kaba.
I don't even think I've been really listening you. I mean, I've been doing some
empathy. No. Don't say that.
No, I have been doing some empathy, but it hasn't been very conscious, like, okay, I'm going to go into empathetic listening.
Well, that's probably
right
a good
now,
thing, too.
You know?
Because don't you hate that when you when you're in conversation and somebody is trying to be empathetic.
Yes. Well, and that, I mean, because the, let me get at that. That's because people have a need for authenticity.
Yeah.
And they want to know that when someone's doing something that, right, that it's real, that it's not right, coming from this phony place. So authenticity yeah, is a need also. And so if you're, even if you're doing empathy via NVC and somebody's having some discomfort because it sounds different, there's a way of just saying, yeah, I'm getting, you really, you want to know that I'm real here. Just being able to speak at what is the need. I'm hearing that you're uncomfortable. So we have never learned how to talk at a need level with one another. That's totally foreign for us. So this whole process,
us
of
meaning people, as a human race,
correct,
as a culture,
human race,
really,
human race. Even though this work, by the way, is being done all over the world now.
Huh.
It's in, I don't know, it's probably 60 or 70 different countries. I've met people all over the world. I know a guy in Sierra Leone doing this work with the army there.
Huh.
I know a woman down in Costa Rica that runs a school for teaching teachers who teaches NVC down there. I know several people up in Canada. I mean, I can go on and on. One of the trainers I've been with for the last couple of years does a lot of work in Korea and Poland. So
wow,
this is not just a, you know, Tallahassee,
yeah,
small time thing.
And it's not simply reactionary in as much as we are taken with the more recent events. This is an ongoing work that started, as you said, 30, 40 years ago,
yes,
academically. But it certainly is poignant that in the current frame of reference, i.e. violence and gun violence particularly. But, you know, even I've noticed this around town. I mean, what is wrong with us that we can't wait for more than 3 seconds at a traffic light before somebody starts honking? I don't get that. I mean, are we that desperate, that frantic, that impatient? And is that somehow
related to
to all this? Are we just messed up?
I do think that that, first of all, I want to say that, you know, I do hear your frustration around like the frenzy of life and stuff, you know, and wanting just, I guess a more slow, sweet way of being with one another.
Politeness used to be important to people. I don't know what's happened.
Yeah. And I do think that this is related, because in order to have empathetic connection with people, it requires time. There is something here about time, slowing down enough, you know. And many people think, oh, I can't give the time to do this, or, you know, I don't have time in my classroom to do this thing. I don't have time in my work to do this thing. But there's I often like to cite some of the work that's coming out of, I think, Wharton School of Business and Harvard School of Business when it comes to companies that are very successful companies.
Mm-hmm.
Has to do with that they are not two-dimensional, meaning companies of the past were just about planning and doing, which is kind of that frenzy thing that you're talking about, planning and doing.
Right.
That what they're showing is that some of the businesses that are most cutting edge and productive are three-dimensional, and the third dimension is connect, plan, and do, and that they actually have explicitly built in connection to their work processes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I think that's what we try to do, like with our happy hours.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people try to do with their socializing, like pull in that connection.
Right.
But it's my experience of that is it's maybe not as real as what people are really wanting.
Boy, I relate to that.
Yeah.
You know, I have thought, and perhaps like you, maybe many of you who are listening right now, you go to these business after hours events or whatever networking club you're part of, and it's just another sales fest.
It's almost like scary. I know when I go to those things, I'm scared personally, because it seems like I don't feel safe to be totally authentic for some reason in those environments.
Yeah.
That just might be my
thing. I'd like to make a rule. No business cards allowed, you know? You can't exchange anything here other than just conversation.
Yeah, well, because you're not getting, by doing that, that's one of those quick things too.
Yeah,
you're not
yeah.
really getting a way to actually really know
right.
the person.
Right.
You know?
Right. Don't say, how are you, if you don't want the answer.
If you really don't want to take the time to have that level of connection
okay.
to really know.
All right. Well, Good. I'm glad we agree on that. Maybe we should start our own group. Then we could make it the way we want it to be. That'd be fun.
Actually, I joined the Women's Prosperity Network.
Did you?
That's what I think led me here to you in a backdoor way. But that group is different with that.
In that respect.
It's for women, so you can't join. But
There you go.
Well, you maybe could, but it might be a little bit weird for you.
That would not be unusual at all. Most of the places I end up feel weird. Oh, folks, I hope you are getting as much out of this as I am. I am enjoying this conversation. In fact, your work, it seems to me, touches on so many areas of life. Well, of course it does. Because is there anything more fundamental to us as human beings than our ability to connect with each other and conversation? Among all the animals on this planet, it seems to me ours is the most complex sort of communication. Maybe that's what gets us into trouble.
I think so. Well, and we're just complex anyways.
Yeah.
I think that
birds tweet, dogs bark, pretty much they get it, With us, we don't know what that means. We're still trying to figure it out.
Well, and a lot of times we think we know what's going on for the other person.
We think
that we're real good at reading people. But again, without having a real candid conversation, most of us, we don't know what's going on for the other person at all. We don't.
Right.
And then there's all these assumptions that get made and just a lot of stuff that comes between people as a result.
If you have just tuned in, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here. Our new friend, Dr. Cindy Bigby, who, for her part, is helping us communicate, I would say, more effectively. And at a level that is more empathic, in a manner that encourages us to connect more meaningfully, and in so doing then, the way she's described it, we engage ourselves, engage one another in nonviolent communication. Now, why the emphasis there? I mean, why not just call it empathic communication or good connection communication or...
I'm not a big fan of the name, mostly because I think a lot of people hear it and get turned off right from the get-go. Like, I don't have nonviolent communication,
violent.
Right? I'm not violent in my communication. Nonviolent communication, as per this definition, is any kind of communication where it's disconnecting between two people. Uh-huh. And so we tend to, in our communication, judge and blame.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Maybe it'd be better to say non-aggressive or non-self-centered communication, but whatever. It is.
Sometimes
it is.
It's called compassionate communication, but I don't like that either, because then I think there's a whole segment of society that thinks, oh, this is like this airy-fairy type of thing.
Need to bring my flowers and beads to the next meeting.
Yeah, I haven't come up with a good name for it yet, but I do know that the process of it is really powerful, and that's why I...
And you brought this to the discussion here in talking about how it applies in business. You know what I thought of? People who are in combat. And you talk to soldiers who have a very simple, if you want to say, task. Kill the enemy. But when you talk to them, they aren't fighting for God and country. They fight for each other. There is that connectedness among them. Mm-hmm. They have each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where they live and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So they live at a level of very close, very secure relationships among a few people who have a job to do. It is still that job in business. I imagine teams of people who, if they aren't connected, aren't looking out for each other, the job won't get done. And that's what you're pointing to.
Yeah, it probably slows down productivity. Slows down productivity on all levels, in schools too. That's my big thing.
Well, and you've done that work extensively, it seems. Tell us about your work at Rickards High School, for example.
I had the gift of helping to bring the Challenge Day programs to Rickards High School.
Challenge Day.
Challenge Day. That was several years ago.
And what was, tell us about Challenge Day. What's that all about?
Oh boy, that's, it's hard to say it in just a few words, but I'll do my best. It's Challenge Day. They like to explain their process. They say people are like icebergs, that, you know, 90% of who we are is below the waterline, and 10% of who we are is above the waterline. That 10% is the image. It's what we want people to know. It's what we want people to see, you know, all the good things about us. And the 90% is all the stuff below, which is, you know, our hopes, our dreams, our insecurities, our fears, all the things that we don't so easily share with one another.
Right.
You know, we tend to have learned not to share that stuff with one another.
Sure.
And so Challenge, they say that, the folks say that, you know, this is a day of dropping the waterline, letting people get real with one another and really get to know each other at that level. And so it's a day of really opening up and becoming vulnerable with one another. They have a whole bunch of activities that they do in a large group and then also in smaller groups so that people get to get real with one another. And there's amazing connection that happens on that day. It's a very eye-opening experience. And I think that, you know, those that went through the process at Rickards, you know, will all agree that it was a very, it was just a very touching experience. I do want to say it's one of the driving forces behind the nonviolent communication work that I'm doing now. I do want to make that tie in here.
Yeah.
If that's okay.
Why not? I mean, this is your hour, Cindy Bigby. We want to know everything there is to know.
Well, on Challenge Days, the way they have it set up, they have large groups where they're, you know, doing people getting comfortable with each other and some kind of funny, funky activities. But then they also have these small group activities. And for every five kids, there's a one volunteer adult, and there's usually about 100 to 120 kids in the gym. And so there's about 25, 30 adults. And each one of those adults has their own family for the day. So they're with the same five kids for the day. And you're doing pretty intimate work. We do this process of, if you really knew me, you know, and you get to really talk about, if you really knew me, like, what is it that you would know about me?
And what are the outcomes like with those kinds
of things? Well, that's kind of what I wanted to speak about, because I've done Challenge Day all over the state with at many, many different schools, many different kinds of schools. And every single time, inevitably, there's a kid in my group that maybe is suicidal, or there's a kid in my group that is going home to an abusive household, or there's a kid in my group that's not going home to a house because they don't have a house. And then, you know, what's stuck in my mind is looking across that gym and seeing that every other group that's out there, every other small group, family group that's working, that they're all having the same experience. Like, this problem of adverse childhood experiences, which the Center for Disease Control did a study on it a few years back, it's epidemic. Like, it really is epidemic. We're all going through a lot of those kinds of things. Abuse at home, drug situations, depression, parents being put in jail, homelessness, not being able to get fed, you know, that there's so much of that stuff going on, and yet nobody's really addressing it. We're not addressing it. And so how could kids actually come to school and focus on their algebra work, you know, when they're not having their basic need for security and safety and all those other things met? And it's really epidemic. People check out the CDC's work on adverse childhood experiences. It's not just the other person. If you're really honest with yourself listening on this program, I'm sure you all know people, if not yourselves, dealing with this kind of stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right. Okay, so I guess then that if I'm going to be a contributor, if I'm going to contribute to the progress, we'll say, of getting people to better communicate, right? Getting kids to better connect with others, to get businesses better connected so they can be more productive, get politicians to have real conversation over issues that are highly debated. I have to know what those basics are in that communication process. And you've given us a good start here. You know, be present, right? Then be
understanding. Not necessarily agreeing, but understanding.
Understanding. And then the third,
figuring out what the need is, what's going on for this person at a need level.
And that's what you're saying here with this challenge day, in part, is that, gosh, you know, this algebra teacher over here is out of her mind with frustration because these kids aren't learning this stuff. But has she or has the system allowed her to really get in touch with what is basic for these kids' needs? Maybe the kid's just so hungry that he hadn't eaten for 2 days, or he just got in a fight with his mom on the way to school, or he got threatened last night by somebody who's going to shoot him, mm-hmm. or the parents are completely abandoned, have abandoned the family, and he's working part-time after school to try to survive, and she's completely unaware of any of that stuff.
Yeah, and well, she's unaware of it, and then she's also got a whole bunch of other, she's got some requirements and big pressures herself as a teacher to, yeah. you know, get standards met and whatnot. And so, you know, the empathy goes both ways in that situation.
Right,
teachers
right.
are not getting enough empathy for the stuff
for her?
That they're doing. We as a society are empathy deprived across the board, honestly. I just wrote an article a couple of weeks ago saying that I had the solution to world peace, which is, and this I know sounds crazy, but it's that every person everywhere should have a massage a day and empathy once
that.
A day. Empathy once a day and massage once a day, we'd be in a totally different place. But really the empathy part, because in order to be able to hear another person, in order for that teacher to be able to be empathetic to her students, she herself has to have enough empathy
mm-hmm.
herself. Mm. And we're all walking around with so much stuff going on in our lives, and nobody has learned how to actually be present with one another in that level.
Folks, we're talking with Dr. Cindy Bigby, who for her part has been very active in this business of nonviolent communication, what also might be described as compassionate communication or empathetic connections. And all of that really is about, if I can say this, Dr. Bigby, and I like saying Dr. Bigby, sounds official, doesn't it? The mechanics of this are universal.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter where you live, where you come from, where you're going. We're all human, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so your effort is to try to get us to think in terms of how we better communicate, which really translates into how we better connect to one another. And so if we've got that working for us, whatever the topic might be it some highly debated issue like violence in schools or gun control, or, you know, how do we solve some of these problems for this poor, helpless algebra teacher over here?
Well, it's funny. It's funny you should say that, because it's reminding me that Marshall Rosenberg, the guy that developed this whole process, I trained with him several years back. He's been up for the Nobel Peace Prize, actually, a few times. He says that if he can get to what the need is for each person different sides of a conflict. Hmm. If I can get to what this person's need is, and I can get to what this person's need is, and I can help them to actually hear, and not just hear, but get, like at a heart level, what the need is of the other person, that every time without fail, it only takes him 10 minutes to come up with a solution for both that's gonna
interesting.
Work. Like, and I've actually seen him do that. You know, take it as a challenge. Okay, two people come up, you're in a fight. Let me see if I can get you to a place of resolution around this. You know, and I myself have seen this over and over again in my own work, that it really does get down to that level. If you can unearth what the need is, but not at an intellectual level, at a feeling level for each person, that you really get it, then all of a sudden solutions miraculously come to the surface.
I am so bad at that with my daughter. Can I tell you? Can we talk?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That, the parent-child thing, that's an easy place to get hung up, for sure.
There are about 5,000 people right now who just turned off the radio. They can't listen to this anymore. It's like, oh, my God, they're talking about me. Well, in fact, we're talking about us, aren't we?
Mm.
I mean, this really is not particularly peculiar to any one of us. It's the human condition.
Yeah, and I also want to say, just because, like, even once you know it, like me, I know this work and I'm trying my best to live this work, it's not like I have it down by any means, you know. I struggle through this process a lot. With my kids, they're my biggest.
Is that what moved you in this direction, that you saw within yourself, why can't I do this? I know this stuff. Or was that just sort of consequential? I mean, did you find yourself early in your career going, there's got to be a better way?
There are a lot of factors that led me to this place, but I think underneath it all is this idea of, like, that I really, really long for this world to be a peaceful place. At a deep, deep level.
Yeah.
And yet it used to piss me off to no end when I myself would come up short with that.
Right.
You know, I'd get upset with my own kids, or
I know better say, than that.
Or say something to somebody that I would totally regret after the fact, you know, or just anything that kind
of. And where does that come from for us? I mean, we do know better. Why do we do something we know is just stupid? Why did I yell at him the way I did? I shouldn't have said that.
Well, I have an answer to that. I want to complete what I was saying, because before I lose that too.
Did I interrupt you? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Okay, no, I liked your question though. So
I feel bad now. No.
So you're feeling sad because consideration matters a lot.
I'm so bad at this job. Can't we get somebody else to do Tallahassee talks? I'm always talking. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was saying that the peace thing, like wanting peace so badly and coming up short again and again and again. This is like the first thing that I've found in life, really, that helps me be in integrity with that idea of wanting peace and being able to live with it, live with it myself as much as possible. It doesn't mean that I don't have peaceful. It doesn't mean that I do not have unpeaceful moments, because I do. Mm-hmm. It happens. But now it's kind of like I have this, like, you know, this anchor, this something to pull me back to a place to get me back in integrity with it. Mm. And I really do think that for the most part, I have really complete relationships with people in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's a way to always come back to connection. Mm-hmm. Always, always, always. Mm-hmm. So that was in answer to, I think, the first thing we were talking about. And then you had a really good question. What was the second one?
Well, in fact, it seems to me that we all suffer that way.
Okay.
Our inconsistencies haunt us. So then my question is, what is it? Is it in our DNA? Is it in our culture? Is it in our
I know. Why
diet?
Why is it if we all have
less sugar, less caffeine? I mean, I don't know.
That's a good question. Well, the little bit that I do know about this, I think it might actually be having to do with the habits, not just over a lifetime, but, you know, over humankind, basically, how we've been wired to take care of ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So I had read recently about, like, even the way our brain has changed over time.
Yeah.
You know, that the part of our brain that gets triggered when we are in conflict or we get scared or nervous.
Yeah,
right?
The fight or flight thing.
Is the amygdala, and that is the part where, you know, you're feeling like you're in survival mode. What do? We either fight, you know, we flee, or we freeze.
Yeah.
We go to one of those three places, and that is the part of our brain that's the oldest. That's the oldest part of our brain, right? Which makes kind of sense when you think about
oldest in that when we were in the womb, we were being formed.
It's actually the first part of the brain, I think, that's formed.
Yeah.
And also, I think
rudimentary.
I think if you look at maybe brain development over centuries, you know, or eons, that was the first thing. That's the oldest part of our brain.
You know, that's interesting, too. I did read research that indicated the human brain between the ages of 20 and roughly 25, that 5 years, it actually grows another 13-14%, mostly in the frontal lobe of the brain, responsible for, hello parents, judgment. So we put a kid in a car at 18 and ask him to have the same ability to make judgments about should I run that light or not, that a 30-year-old would have.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
And also, that happens to be the part of the brain that, I guess it's the neocortex that you're talking about.
Yeah,
that's the part
yeah.
when you look at a picture of the brain that we all kind of recognize as the brain. It's that wrinkly, white, grayish part, right?
Right.
That's the biggest part of our brain, but it's also the newest part of our brain, right?
The least developed.
It's the weakest part of our brain.
Wow.
But that's also where, like you say, reasoning, but empathy, compassion, all that stuff is located in that part of the brain.
Remarkable.
So what that tells me is that, you know, we're kind of like been habituated, even because of biologically, that's where we go is into that fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah.
But that now we actually have greater capacity to do something different.
Remarkable. I've seen that too. Dr. Golden, Jack Golden, for many years doing research on brainwave therapy and, you know, showing you the MRI of the brain. And during those moments when you're in fight or flight, that outer lobe, that activity actually shuts down. And so everything gets concentrated within that part of the brain. And you've seen, some people are very, very obvious about this,
mm-hmm.
that when they're threatened, there is no more reasoning going on. Because literally, anatomically, mm-hmm. the brain has said, we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to survive here. And so your suggestion here is, okay, if you find somebody in conversation with you or groups that are at odds and are not communicating, the first thing, it seems to me, is to get them away from that fight or flight position, right? How do you do that?
Well, it's funny. I teach about weight.
Weight. As in W-E-I-G-H-T?
No.
Okay.
I teach
what are you
about
trying
weight.
To say W-A-I- here, Cindy?
W-A-I-T.
Because I've been on the treadmill faithfully since my first of the year New Year's resolution thing.
Don't worry.
22 pounds I've lost. Thank you very much. You're not talking that, are
not
you?
Not that kind of weight.
We're talking what?
Weight, W-A-I-T. And
okay.
It stands for in NVC, why am I talking?
Why am I talking?
And my kids used to tell me early on when I was learning NVC and trying to implement it at home, you're really bad at waiting. Because our first instinct when we get triggered is to say something. You know, you probably can almost like feel that energy of wanting to like say something, right?
Yep.
And it's just in that moment when you probably shouldn't say a word. Why am I talking? Like, be quiet now. In fact, Marshall Rosenberg also quotes, when emotions are high, intelligence is low, right? So that's like the time where you want to, you know, and it all comes down to, do you want to have connection with this person?
Or not.
If you want connection with this person,
yeah,
you know, which I really believe that most of us want connection with everybody, but in some situations you might think not, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But like with my kids or with my husband or the people that I work with, you know, my friends, I might want to do the work to wait. And during that wait time in NVC, there are some very, very specific processes. One might be go get empathy from another person who knows the NVC empathetic process. Because when you can feel totally get presence around what your needs are, all of a sudden something can shift in you in such a way that you don't have that urgency to have it your way. You can come from a different place in your communication. Right? So the end, because ultimately what you're wanting to do is try to be able to know what's going on for the other person first. But it's so hard because our inclination in conflict is, I want you to hear what I have to say.
Wow.
You know, I want you to get me, right?
Sure.
And when I'm teaching, I often quote Einstein, who's a pretty smart dude, and he has a quote that says something like, the significant problems we face cannot be solved at the same level of thinking that created them.
Huh.
So what that means to me in conflict situation is you have to do something different, come from a totally different space in order to actually have the conflict really resolved, right? And that different space is to be in empathy with the other person. But sometimes you're just too darn upset to do that, right? So there's a whole bunch of stuff. This is where the time factor comes in, okay? For big conflicts anyways, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can do to get yourself back into a space of even being curious about what's going on for the other person. So this wait period is not the kind of thing that most of us do when we're waiting, most of us, when we're waiting, number one, we're either trying to just be quiet because you're so angry at the other person, you're going to make them pay for it, right?
Yeah, right?
It's not that kind of a wait. Or, you know, you're waiting because you're totally like bamboozled by what they have said and you don't even know what to say. You're so like upset with it. You're in that
checked out.
You're in a freeze or flight mode. You're not really in a wait mode, okay? And then you kind of think, oh, things, time passes and it kind of settles a little bit and then everything seems like it's okay again. But the problem is it was never really complete. You never got complete with it. So I guarantee it's going to rear its ugly head again at some point in time, right? So you want that wait period to be this productive wait period that you get empathy or you do something called self-empathy. It's a learned skill. Or there's even a process that I teach people called the enemy image process that you learn that's all empathy based, where you dismantle your image of the other person before going into, you know, having the conversation. You even give yourself permission to say some mean, nasty things about the other person, but to yourself. You know, you got to get that out of you too first before you can start to take the steps back into connection. There's so much to this work. I mean, it's impossible to really share it in an hour. I will be learning and living this work for the rest of my life, honestly.
Well, it seems to me, folks, that if you've just joined us, we are talking with Dr. Cindy Bigby here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny on a Saturday. Glad you've tuned in. Yeah, in the short amount of time we have, we're just getting a smattering of those most important points. But it's clear that not only is this your life's work, it is a work that we can engage from day to day. And if we're interested in learning how to wait, right? Why am I talking? See, I know the answer to that. This is very simple for me because I'm supposed to do this part. But my question is always, why did I say that? You know. But anyway, if we wanted to improve skill, are there programs available that you're offering or that are available to us generally that we can plug into?
Yes. Well, I do offer workshops here. My next one is going to be February 16th and 17th, and it's a weekend intensive where you get the basics. And then I'm also doing, as a connection with, there's this 1 billion rising thing happening at Clayman's Plaza on February 14th. It's a nationwide thing to bring attention to the abuse of women worldwide.
Wow.
I'm connected in with that whole thing, but as a part of that program, I'm offering a taste of NVC at the United Church off Mahan on Valentine's Day.
Oh, cool!
Which it's a great thing to do with your spouse, you know, rather than chocolate or flowers. How about connection? You know,
yes.
So those are my two upcoming events. I teach at Thomas University right now. I'm teaching NVC. And anybody can go online and just Google NVC and you'll get a ton of stuff. There's all kinds of resources out there.
Right.
Many, many trainers worldwide doing this work.
Right. Well, folks, I know that you are full of questions there for Dr. Bigby. And I suppose there's a way for them to connect with you. You have a website?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up because I forgot to mention it.
Ah, well, tell us about your website.
My website is very easy. It's www.cindybigby, Bigby is B-I-G-B-I-E, PhD.com, all connected.
cindybigby.com.
cindybigbyphd.com.
Oh, okay. cindybigbyphd.com. And Bigby is B-I-G-I-E.
B-I-G-B-I-E.
B-I-E. Yeah, Bigby. Right.
Bigby.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Now you know what you're dealing with here, folks. CindyBigbyPhD.com is the website. And there we're going to learn more about NVC, which we've learned is nonviolent communication. We're also going to find out where we can plug in how we can plug in. You've got a workshop coming up on Saturday the 16th and Sunday the 17th. And where is that going to happen?
That's at Abundance Wellness Center off of John Knox Road, right across from the Truesdale Pool.
Oh, Abundance Wellness Center. Okay.
Yeah, I've never been there. It's a very, very sweet place.
Okay, and is there a price tag for that?
Yes, it's $200 for the weekend, and that also includes two practice group sessions and a one-on-one session with me after the fact, because I do one-on-one work and mediations with people.
Is this adult to adult, adult to kids, married couples?
Anybody can show up, except I do think there's an age factor. Mm. I have had parents come with their children before, but I do think that probably eighth grade is about the limit, because there's a certain amount of cognitive development that has to be there for a person to really totally get the, I guess, the full fruit of what I'm offering in that weekend. Mm-hmm. Even though I do think little guys can definitely learn NVC and empathy, the way that I'm teaching and what I'm doing during that weekend requires a certain amount ability to be able to think about what you think about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that you don't actually get hardwired to do until a little bit later in age.
If you were thinking in terms of our community, Tallahassee particularly, are there ways in which you think that we as a community could better encourage this sort of behavior? Are there programs that we could be offering, or are there activities that we could be pointing to on a regular basis that otherwise we're not aware of? And you've mentioned a couple of the things that you're doing personally.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you imagine how do you imagine us as a people? You know, we think of these corporate situations, businesses that have institutionally developed this connected aspect to their...
How do we do this?
Well, how do we do so as a community?
How do we do it? Well, I mean, that's
a day in the park.
That's a big part of what I'm trying to do, is get more and more people trained up in this and have practice groups and have more people know the empathetic process, so that businesses, many businesses or governmental institutions, like, you start your day off by just having a 10-minute empathy session with another person, a dyad. Mm. Everybody starts that together. You start your day like that. Mm. People are like, oh, we don't have too much time for that. But I guarantee you, if people started doing that on a regular basis, you'd be more productive during your day. Mm. I really have a big, big desire to see this happening in schools. I'm very interested. There's been a lot of talk lately about restorative justice for the juvenile justice system. Mm-hmm. I see nonviolent communication as a key component in restorative processes in school. Mm. So not just when a kid gets in trouble, where you would do a restorative process, which NVC and empathetic listening and presence is all a part of that, but also just on the proactive side of that, where teachers and students actually learn how to talk to one another. Mm-hmm. Like, a kid's having a bad day, rather than immediately sending them to the office saying, yo, what's going on?
Right.
Like, you know, it looks like you're really upset about something. And is it something about, like, you know, that you're tired and you need some ease right now in your life? Like, just being able to talk to a kid like that to bring them back into presence in the situation. Huh. And or your classroom's going a little zany, and then you're noticing that your kids are not focusing, and you're getting frustrated as a teacher. How can you actually circle up your kids, even if it's just for 10 minutes, to get a feel for what's going on here? How is this affecting everybody? How can we go forward? Like, there's actually learned skills that you can be teaching people how to do that. So I'd like to see it happening at the school level, so that kids are learning it, so that they're growing up with these skills, and then it ends up everywhere.
Well, I'll tell you, folks, if you've missed out on today's broadcast, don't feel too badly, because we are in the practice of making sure that we wait and we make it possible for you to listen, catch this, on our website. So you can go later today even, and you'll be able to hear everything that Dr. Bigby has shared with us. Remember her website, CindyBigbyPhD.com, And that Bigbie is B-I-G-B-I-E.
Thank you.
In fact, we'll learn a lot more about nonviolent communication, learn about those activities that are available to us as we plug in. And folks, don't forget that we want you to stay plugged in with us. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny every Saturday right here at 93.3 Freedom 93. And we'll be here again next Saturday at 2 o'clock as we are to bring to you all that Tallahassee is talking about. If you have an idea for a guest, a topic you'd like us to consider, you can email topics at TallahasseeTalks.com. That's the website, TallahasseeTalks.com, and we'll be looking to hear from you. Folks, we're glad you had a chance to be with us, and thank you, Dr. Bigbie, for making it part of your day.
Thanks.
We're glad you were with us. Folks, that's what we have for us. Remember, we're here for you because we want to know what you're talking about. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.